I'm Adam.
And I'm Mike.
Welcome to The Dad Experience, a podcast where dads can connect and openly share stories.
Here's a taste of what's to come in our latest episode of The Dad Experience.
The diapers, and then it's like, well, these diapers are giving her a rash. And then I'll be like, well, what do I do? She's like, just go out and buy every kind of diaper there is and bring one of each home. And I was in the city. I'd come home from Rite Aid. I swear, and like I'd be carrying this like gigantic bag, and we just tossing diapers, and then.
The Dad Experience. Welcome to the Dad Experience. Here again for another great episode. Mike, how's it going?
Not too shabby, bro. How's it going over on your end?
Everything is clever, man. Back into the school year and ready to roll. So, you want to get this episode going?
Let's blast off.
All right. Well, we got a really great episode for everybody today. We have an awesome guest. This guest comes to us. Actually, we met through one of the fan favorites of the podcast, through Eric, one of Eric's buddies. He reached out to and said, hey, you got to have this guy on the podcast. So we have Carrie here with us today. Carrie's going to bring a unique perspective to everything, Mike. He's going to let us know about raising a kid from, you know, infancy all the way up to, you know, young adult. Really young adult. What is young adult nowadays? Who knows? But I would classify his experience and his situation as through young adult. And he's got some unique things he'll bring to the table and talk to us about. So, Carrie, welcome to the Dad Experience.
Hey, thanks a lot. Really appreciate it. I've been listening to you guys, you know, for the last couple of weeks. And I only wish that when my daughter was born, which is many years ago, that I had this podcast to listen to. But there you go.
Well, it's good to hear. It's good to hear that, you know, that things are making a difference for folks. And that's why we have people on. And that's why we reach out to folks and get connected with other folks, because we need all the help we can get as dads. There's a lot of things that I know I've gone through and experiences that I've gone through that we've talked about on the show that I don't think I would have been able to get through as successfully without talking to other dads. And so we're really excited to have you on and take us on your journey as a dad and things that you went through. So you're a blogger, you're a dad, and you're just full of life experiences. So tell us a little bit about yourself. Tell us about you and being a dad. Let's start maybe in the early years.
Sure. So first off, Lori, who was my wife, we're divorced now, but when we found out, I like to say we, right? Because that's a proverbial we. When we found out that we were pregnant, it happened pretty quickly. And that really threw that next 9 months of my life into like, what do I do now? You know, like, how do I prepare for this? And, you know, I know we kind of start this like at the point of, you know, when you have a kid, but I think there's a lot that goes on before. And I was kind of like going back and forth to, Babies Are Us or Kids Are Us. You go like 10 times and trying to pick out like the exact right crib and all this other stuff. And I started realizing that the books that that Lori was reading were just getting her all concerned. Every week she thought there was another problem. So I went to the library and I found this book called The Expectant Dad. I don't know the author, but there's a picture of a guy. He's got a button shirt. And he wrote this really cool book, and it takes like 10 minutes each chapter. Each chapter goes through represents a month. So month one, month two, month three, all the way up to month nine. Then he has an expectant book series from ages like one, right? You know, so like one through three, and then a little bit older. And so when I was reading that, my unique experience was I was starting to panic because I didn't really know how to be a dad, obviously. So I went to Barnes & Noble and they were reading to kids. And you would think the kids would be crying. I was crying. I was like, I can't do this. How am I going to do this? This doesn't make sense. I got work. I'm never going to make this through. So I'm crying in the children's section at Barnes & Noble. Actually, it's Barnes & Noble. And all these kids are looking at me and the moms are like, stay away from my guy. And I'm like reading. And then I come across this thing that says, there's no right way to do this. And you can choose to be any kind of dad you want. It's your choice if you want to be super engaged and it's your choice. If you have a lot of work or other things going on, you just want to be like, at some point you can go into the second part of being a dad, which is just like maintenance. And there's another part where, you know, if you're traveling or other things are going on, where you're just like, I just got to get by during the day. And somehow that really helped me. And I actually threw out all the other books and I just gave that book to Lori, and that actually helped her because, you know, it talks about what's going on with the child in terms of emotional, physical development, and what's going on in the woman's brain and what's going on in the man's brain. So that kind of like helped me. And now I'll jump into that experience. So for me, this was 2001. It's late September. My daughter's born, Samantha. Best thing in my life. Had no idea it was going to be ahead of me, right? It's what kind of like a little bit what you guys are going through. And even though I read that book to just give me a little bit of push, no guide. And it was just like a really incredible, it was an incredible, fulfilling experience and rewarding one that you can't really describe to anyone, you know, unless you do have a kid. But at the same time, it's pushing you to the limit, like a pressure chamber. You're like, am I going to lose it right now? Okay, I lost it. Now what do I do? I have no time for myself. How come I ordered Chinese food at 6 o'clock and I haven't eaten and it's 10 o'clock? So, you know, I'm going to just like pause for a second, but like that was kind of like my experience, kind of like just throwing myself in and just deciding that I'm going to, you know, really be super involved from an early age.
Right, right. And did you find like, because you talked a lot, and this is what I found a lot when I was figuring out, just I went through a lot of the same things, you know, trying to figure out that me, it was the technology, and I don't know if it was to keep my mind off of, you know, what was to come, but I was like, I got to figure out what the best baby camera is, and I got to figure out what the best way to do X, Y, and Z is. And did you find that, like, for you, that book, and I'm just curious, was it written more towards, well, you said it was for the expectant dad, right?
So the first book was The Expected Dad, and okay. Then it got picked up by somebody, and then he wrote another one, which is basically the, you know, each month of the first year. And then wow. He has one from ages like 2 through 5. And so it's 10 minutes to read, and whenever we would go into the pediatrician, I had an idea, a little checklist to say, how's she doing emotionally? How's she doing physically? How's she all good? Okay, I'm off to work. Sounds like a plan.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, and I think that, you know, there are a lot of fears. And I for me, it was funny because a lot of the stuff I read, it was quite the opposite from my experience, because it was all about like humor and blowout diapers and just all the crazy things that are going to happen that are just, you know, the gross things of being a dad or a parent, and none of the like philosophical end. And I found that my wife was finding more of that stuff, and I was learning more of how to be a dad because of that stuff. So I wish I would have known about that book. So it's a good resource. It sounds like we'll have to look that up and put it in show notes for folks to check out, you know, especially if it's quick reads for every month of what you're going through and experiencing when you're going through that pregnancy with your wife. So it sounds like the way to go. So, you know, you're dealing with all those anxieties and getting through all of that brings you up to that delivery day. Was it what you expected it to be?
No, it really wasn't. It was all of a sudden, my water broke. We have to leave now. now we have to have packed this like bag before. Now remember, this is in 2001. So I know it sounds really, if people listening to this, there's no iPhone. There was a flip phone. You know, you had a little flip phone and I had my Palm device. And so I think like you, when you were going through all those electronic things, I would actually just enter everything into my Palm, like the doctor's phone numbers and the different dates that things are going on and whatever it might be. And I actually would have a conversation with Lori and say, Lori, you're saying this is supposed to happen at this time, but the palm says it's on Tuesday. I'm gonna go with my electronic device on that. No. So anyway, the water broke. We got up there. The doctor who was supposed to deliver wasn't there. There was another doctor, and I mean, it kind of went really smoothly. And halfway through the process, you know, we're just waiting, and then a little head comes out. And it was, I felt like it was Total Recall-ish or Alien-ish. And this little head pops out and just turns around. And they take out Samantha and they go, it's a baby girl. And I'm, was it just, you know, I don't know. I don't know how you guys felt, but it's like on top of the world. It was like nothing that can take me down. Nothing, no better feeling.
No, it's thinking back to when my boys were born, I remember vividly, just like when the first one was born, you know, your wife is pregnant for so long and then, you know, 9 months. I mean, that's not like super long, but you know, whatever, potato, potato. But, it's not really the dad mojo or whatever doesn't hit you until that kid is out. And then once it's out, it's like, oh my God. Like you're standing on the edge of a cliff for 9 months, and then that kid comes out, and you just fall off, and then
you're
falling, but it's instantaneous that you hit the ground. Boom! You hit the ground. You're a different person. It's like nothing else in the world matters. You know, you can give a crap about anything. It's all of it's about this kid. And you're a different person. You're changed. You're changed irrevocably, forever.
Right.
And it's amazing.
It is amazing. And you know, I'll just bring an experience. You guys probably have experienced something similar to this. I remember, like, so for us, you know, it's late 2001. There are a lot of things happening in America that were pretty tragic. And I would have friends come over and I would just say, Laura, yes, we're going to let different people hold Samantha. Okay. And whoever held her was just like, I feel so good. I got to come back here next week. It was like they're passing around the orb from Sleeper. You know, it was I'm not kidding. It was like everyone that
I love it.
Anyone that held Samantha was just
like, wait, was that 80s or 90s?
So, well, Sleeper came out. I don't know. I think I saw Sleeper. I'm dating myself. I guess in the 80s and 90s, I may have watched it.
Okay, that's all right. I was close. I was close. Yeah. We're on par. Yeah, we're on track. We're on track, Carrie. We're good.
Yeah, Samantha. Yeah. And then this is how I kind of describe the next experience. It's like all of a sudden, like, you got things coming into like the apartment. It's like the crib is showing up, and then like, or maybe we had the crib set up before, and then we have the dresser, and then the diapers, and then it's like, well, these diapers are giving her a rash, and then I'll be like, well, what do I do? She's like, just go out and buy every kind of diaper there is and bring one of each home. And I was in the city. I'd come home from Rite Aid, and I swear, and like, I'd be carrying this like gigantic bag, and we're just tossing diapers, and then it was like, these bottles aren't working, and then I go get another thing of bottles, and there was no Amazon, which would have been great. And then the biggest thing was the baby formula. She was lactose intolerant, which I never even heard of back then. And so we were like on our sixth baby formula called Alimentum, which is like the most expensive and stink. It smelled horrible formula. And you're just like, you're trying different things and you're not sleeping. And, you know, yeah, I'm like going into the office and there are people that were younger than me and they're all like talking about how they were partying all night. But I'll tell you what's interesting. You guys might have experienced this. The adrenaline that kicks in, like the ability to like get no sleep for a couple of nights or a couple of weeks or a couple of months and still give like your love and playfulness to your kid.
Absolutely.
I mean, there's some days, you know, it just kicks in. You don't even, and if I were to leave like, say one thing to people, it's like, you can do it. Like, I went on the philosophy of just being good enough. I said, okay, if the average person in America has the intelligence of whatever it is, and I'm not average, then I'm going to do okay. And that was kind of, I mean, it took a while, a little bit, to build the philosophy, to be quite honest, but there's, you know, my philosophy that I try to really live by was, can I give as much love, playfulness, encouragement, and discipline as I can? And I read a child psychiatry book like a month before Samantha was born, and it said, you know, the two most important things you can give your kid. I mean, right now it might be an iPad and maybe something else, but back then, you know, and I still think it holds, it's like love and discipline. Because if you give a child love, they'll develop self-love, which is really important. And if you give a child a little bit of discipline when they're young, and then a little bit more as they get older, I'm not talking about that football coach from the 70s that's yelling at them, but like they develop self-discipline. And those are two things that are really helpful, you know, that I found.
No, absolutely. And I think for me, you know, you can't place it. We've talked about it a couple times on other episodes where we've said, you know, kind of the only similar experience, and I can't remember which episode it was or who said it on what episode. It was one of our guests. And they said, you know, you can't explain seeing your child for the first time. And the thing that it's closest to is like how you would experience Christmas when you were a kid. You didn't sleep, you were excited, you were tired, but you were still up first thing in the morning with them because you were just so excited to be there. And, you know, and that still doesn't do it justice. That doesn't explain that feeling. There's no words that can explain that feeling, you know? And then the other thing you said, you know, kind of living on adrenaline and kind of being that kind of adrenaline. I always was in awe of my father because he would like be able to come to an event and sleep for 3 hours and go to work all day and do it all over again. And I don't know how he did it. And now it's like, yeah, now all I do is sleep just very little and that's it. And that's how it works. So, you know, I think it just shifts. It's funny how nature works, you know, and it kind of nature, nurture, all those good things and how they kind of go hand in hand and everything comes out harmoniously. Now, I can't say it's roses all the time.
No,
but
definitely not.
I do know that.
Roses grow in manure, friend.
Exactly. I have understood that end of things. I was always just so taken aback on, man, my dad never sleeps. And, you know, and my mom never slept either, but I always knew my dad was always at work super early and my dad would always be out late at a concert or, you know, with us coming to see us perform, whether when I was in college or whatever. And then he would go the next day back to work and, you know, getting up and being at work at 5 a.m. and he was in, you know, where I was going to school an hour and a half away till 2 a.m. So, you know, it's like, it's crazy to me, but I think it's just, like you said, it's just all of a sudden something changes and it's just this big, you know, bundle of joy, like they say. And there's no emotion or feeling that I can describe that gives it 100% accuracy. And the only thing that I've ever thought that comes even close is, like I said, describe the Christmas morning feel when you're a kid, you know what I mean? Or that's really the only thing I can kind of relate it to for me, you know? So, but exactly.
No, I think it totally makes sense. In fact, I'm Jewish. So for me, there really wasn't much, you know, looking forward to Hanukkah was kind of like, all right, I'm going to get 11 crappy gifts or whatever it might be, or eight crappy gifts. So I actually used to look forward to Christmas morning. And I would just call my friend and be like, what did you get? I got to come over. But I actually want to just bring up like one experience and let me know if you guys had this. So I just remember this so vividly. So Samantha's like, I don't know, 5 or 6 months old. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to get home early tonight from work. I'm going to get home at like 6, whatever it might be. And I'm just going to like bond with Samantha. That's what I'm going to do. But I put my keys into the door. The door opens without me even like touching the keys, and it's Lori. And she goes, here. And she just sticks Samantha like right in front of me, right? And then I have to hold on to her, right? Because she's like, I'm exhausted. So like, I hold on to Samantha. And then I grab a white cloth and put it over my shoulder. And I look at her and I give her a kiss. And I'm like, you are so beautiful. And she spits up on the other part of my shirt. So I'm like, okay. So this is what it's going to be like. This is now, I'm down to like now five shirts. Like now I'm down a shirt. There's no way this stuff's coming out. And we're just going to wear the shirt. But so, you know, I put her up on my shoulder when I walk around, I burp her or whatever it might be. She just had, you know, a little bit of formula. And then, you know, it was that time that we were going to transition from like a formula during the day to like that baby food that actually I tasted and is so good. And, you know, I'm thinking like, we didn't even eat. So I'm like, Lori, what are we doing? She's like, I don't know, order Chinese. I order Chinese. The food comes. It just sits there. Okay. We have soup and the rest of the meal's there. It's like 6 o'clock. And Samantha, most of the food that I'm trying to get into her mouth is going on her cheek or on her lip, or she's spitting it out and it's winding up on the baby chair. It's winding like all over, it's going all over, but in her mouth. And I got to get like a second bottle. And then it's like 7 o'clock. And I'm like, all right, God. I'm like, Laura, how about we have an egg roll or something, a spring roll? And all I could describe is like at night, just like completely changed everything. And then I'm like, okay, I guess it's, I'll take this turn changing Samantha's clothes. I changed the clothes, I changed the diapers. I'm like, okay, I can settle into the night. Maybe I'll put on the game. And then she gives me that look that you get when your football team is not working really well. And I know she's taking a crap. And I'm like, oh my God, I got to change her diapers again. Got to change her diapers again. And then I bring her out and she's thirsty. And then she pees in the diaper and it just smells and the weight falls on her. And then I go, I change our diaper again. And before I know it, it's like 12 o'clock at night. And, you know, kind of like what you're saying, what your father did, like he went to all the events, but he probably went through the same thing. I mean, did you guys find like the same experience? Like in one night I had a blissful experience holding and kissing my daughter to not being able to feed her the right way to changing diapers. And then going, oh my God, I have a presentation tomorrow. I guess I'm just going to be tired. I'm not quite sure how I'm going to make it through.
Oh, absolutely. I think that happens more often than not. And then, you know, but then, you know, for me, I've always found that that next day it happens, then I'm living either because I'm so tired, I'm living off that adrenaline and worked up so much. I don't know what it is. But, you know, I have found out that, and I don't know if that's a thing, you know, I know you always hear about, you know, pregnancy brain or mommy brain or whatever, you know, I think it, to some extent, I don't think it's the same because I don't want to say that it's exactly the same. I definitely have my organizational skills have been lacking at times more often than not since the children have come along, where I used to be able to remember dates and do things without writing things down, and now not so much anymore. And I'm finding that more and more. But yeah, I mean, there are times where I'm like, how am I going to get through this? Especially, you know, for me in the fall, I teach marching band. So I'm out the door, you know, I'm up and moving and ready to go at 4:45 in the morning. And there's some days where, you know, I don't always hear the baby. My wife is the one that usually takes care of that at night, which thankfully in the fall, because I'd be in a lot of trouble. But there are those days where she's had to wake me up, and I haven't been the most pleasant all the time because I'm not great to wake up out of a sleep. And it's like, I don't know what I'm going to do or how I'm going to make. And I get through, but man, those are the days when you want to come home though and be just veg, and you can't because you're back on again. So yeah, there's definitely ups and downs, and I've definitely experienced that, you know, quite a few times actually. So yeah, you're not alone there. I would have to say that it's crazy. I don't know how it gets done. And you know, the real heroes are, you know, the moms, because I think they're the ones that are doing it twice as many times as we are a lot of the time. So
I think I changed more. Are we talking changing diapers here?
No, I'm just talking in general, being tired and just being up and doing things.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, then I 100% agree with that. If you're talking diapers, no, I'm the diaper king in this household.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying overall.
Overall, absolutely.
Yeah, I think overall. But you've got that. You got the infancy stage, and you kind of hit all that, and you're going through it, and you're getting them fed and teaching them, helping them how to walk, and starting to learn language and talking to them, getting them out of the gaga goo goo stuff, and you're moving to the toddler period. What stands out to you the most, or what's your most vivid memory there, Carrie, from your daughter's toddler period?
Hmm. you know, we were talking a little before about what that toddler period is, and you know, whether that's age two or three, or I mean, I can just say a couple things. I know at like 13 months, Samantha started to walk, and the one thing that I'll never forget is she started walking on a Friday night. She took a couple steps. So early the next day, you know, we would have different shifts. So I was up to 1 a.m. and I'd get up at 5 a.m. I just couldn't get up at, you know, any time between there. And I just said, Sam, we're going for pizza. She doesn't know what I'm talking about, or maybe she does. And we walked for a good 40 minutes and only went half a block. I do not exaggerate. We were on 82nd and 3rd, and we walked down literally half a block to halfway between 82nd and 83rd Street to a pizza place. And we started just doing that walk, and I was like, damn, you could do this. Keep going. It was such a magical moment. Now, I don't want to give everything as a magical moment because there are definitely some tough times. The toddler stage, okay. So this is like my feeling on the toddler stage. The toddler stage is like, now you're negotiating. You know, my friends used to say, I'm negotiating with the terrorist and I'm losing. You know, I think they say that kids are like, babies are like sponges, and even toddlers are like sponges. They hear everything you have to say. They listen to everything. And then the toddler stage, they spit it right back at you. So I remember I remember Samantha going, oh, fuck. And I'm like, how do I react to this? How does she know this word? And then I'm thinking, fuck, I'm the one that said that. So I'm like, yes, oh, fudge. She's like, no, oh, fuck. I'm like, oh, fug. And so we finally got her to change that to like, oh, fudge, which was actually pretty good. But it was a reminder to me, not that that was a sweet moment, it was a moment like, oh my God, I'm being watched. It's like George Orwell. Everything I do, everything I say, the way that I treat people, the way that I talk to people, what I say in the house when I think that she's not paying attention, is coming right back out. And, you know, when I was listening to one of your episodes, you had Rob on, who was in the, he was the stock market, and then he was a poker player, and those two things go hand in hand really well, actually. And he was on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, and he had said a couple things, and one of the things, you know, he said was, I think he was pointing to the fact that, again, like, there's no right way of, like, doing everything, but they get smarter when in their toddler age, in their negotiation, and they can just decide, I'm not doing that. And then what do? And that's what happened to me. I remember we're on a time pressure, right? We have to get Samantha to certain places, or we're meeting friends, and she just sits down and goes, I don't feel like going. Like, well, no, we're going. And she's like, no, I don't feel like going. That's okay. And I'm thinking, like, she has all the time in the world to negotiate. There's no possible way that I can win on this. I mean, have you guys experienced? I imagine you guys experienced that too as well.
Yeah. I mean, even at almost, you know, well, almost two, my daughter, actually, as we record this in real time, she will be two tomorrow, but, you know, she still negotiates, man. It's like, I don't know. We give her these like frozen yogurt, like, you know, those ones that are in the package, we'll freeze them and she'll think they're popsicles, but they're really, it's just yogurt. And she's had those like once or twice, and it's like, she's definitely negotiating all the time. When she wants one of those, she'll eat anything. She eats everything. She's a good eater. But the minute she has that in her mind, it's like, she wants that now. So then it's total negotiation. And 90% of the time it's like, you don't win. And I mean, it's just got to be plan, strategy, and how to work it out. So yeah, I think they're just hardwired into that at a young age, that Yeah, I don't care. That's it. They know how to negotiate and learn those skills pretty quick. I don't know if it's observation from us, but man, I was impressed at you know, 1.5 and, you know, almost 2 years old, that she's a pretty good negotiator already. So yeah, definitely. I like I said, that I'm specifically thinking of tonight. You know, she thinks that the yogurt's a popsicle. That's what she thinks it is, because we freeze that. And it's like, as soon as dinner comes in, if we open the freezer during dinner or the fridge, it's it. It's popsicle time. And then it's like, okay, what do we do to get her to finish eating? Even though we know she eats all that food and she wants like green beans and stuff, that's what she eats. She'd rather have that than meat. But as soon as that happens, it's like, man, we're in trouble. So yeah, I don't know. I don't know what's right or wrong in that situation. All I know is that we just try and work the magic and kind of finagle it in and getting those extra few bites that she needs in on the regular food, and then kind of working our way over to those healthier snacks afterwards that she enjoys. So yeah, it's there's a lot of ups and downs with that on my end. I don't know, Mike, what about you?
We just hardcore it now, man. You eat. We don't make anybody their own, you know, individual meals. It's whatever Jamie or I make.
Oh,
and that's
for
what
sure.
Everybody gets. You eat that within, and these freaking kids, they eat so dang slow. It's ridiculous. But regardless, you know, I give them a half hour. You get a half hour to eat this. You get a half hour to eat what I put in front of you. You don't eat it, you don't get a treat. 15 minutes totally. Later, you're still not eating. It's bedtime. That's it. Boom. Done. I'm not screwing around. 45 minutes, you should be well done with your dinner. You should be having your treat.
Absolutely.
You know, and whatever the treat is, you know, these guys are, you know, 5 and 7, so they can have whatever they want. Popsicle, some ice cream, a couple pieces of small chocolate, you know, whatever. But you gotta eat that dinner.
No, sorry. And don't get me wrong. We do not cook different meals for our kids at all. I mean, while my youngest is still on the bottle, but for Eleanor, she eats the same meal that we don't cook anything different. She doesn't get anything different. It's just when she sees that fridge open, it's like, okay, we know our time's limited, so how's this going to work? And she's still pretty young to really comprehend everything totally. You know what I mean?
Right.
But yeah, definitely. We do not do separate meals at all, but it is though. It's like it, or just, you know, before bedtime, you know, we do some wind down. We don't usually watch TV, and it's like negotiating to get certain things done, you know, clean up or whatever. And it's like, okay, we're going to transition into here. Now you get your little bit of TV to wind down before bed. Remember, you're going to have that. And it's like, that's the little carrot that we negotiate with sometimes, but it's never just plop them in front of the TV, because that's the babysitter. But you know, it's definitely the finding those caveats that do work for every individual. I think, you know, that's key. That's key. So I think
Adam, first of all, before we turn this over, just happy birthday to your daughter.
Oh, and thanks. Yeah, no, she's
awesome.
We're still trying to figure, you know, she kind of knows what's happening, but doesn't kind of know what's happening and doesn't know what to expect. And, you know, we're having a celebration for her and with family and stuff. And, you know, just kind of, it'll be fun. It'll be a good time. We're looking forward to celebrating that with her. So she's come a long way, and she's had some ups and some downs, and everything looking great for her. So we're really excited to celebrate this second birthday with her. But, you know, I think this is a good place for us to take a short break. Don't forget that the Dad Experience is a part of the Parents On Demand Network. You can get that Parents On Demand Network app from iTunes or the Google Play Store. You can find our podcast and many other parenting podcasts on there. You know, stick around to the end of this episode, because you'll find out about another parenting podcast that, if you love the Dad Experience, we're sure you're going to like. Don't forget, also in our show notes, you can find out how to find us. We're on Instagram, Twitter, all those great social medias, or you can find us at experienceanddad@gmail.com or anything through our website, thedadexperiencepodcast.com. So when we return, we're going to talk to Carrie a little bit more. We're going to talk about those tween years, those crazy tween years, and those things to expect. And I know Mike and I are going to be listening closely with a really, really, really interested ear, because I know we're coming upon those mighty quicker than we think. So stick around after the break and find out about that. Welcome back to the Dad Experience. We are here with Carrie. We've been talking to Carrie about early years with his kids, with his daughter. He's got a lot of experience all the way up to a young adult, and basically young adult. So we're kind of taking this in two parts. We're taking it from the early stages of being an infant in pregnancy years all the way through toddler years and now up to tween years. So, you know, in this first part, we're going to talk about that aspect of it. And then in our second part of the episode, we will talk a little bit more about the later years. And we're really excited to get into that too. So Carrie, you know, we now hit the tween years. What is it about those tween years? I'm a little bit scared of those years. I don't know if I should be or not. Maybe it's because I've taught middle school before and I know some of those awkward stages and I know how kids can be, but you know, what are some of those most memorable experiences that you had, good or bad, in those tween years with your daughter?
Be afraid. Be very afraid. you know, it's interesting. My God. So my daughter's 17 now. So I'm going to go back into the tween years. You know, one of the things that I noticed in the tween years, somewhere between toddler and tween, is your kid needs you and wants you and wants to be around you. And then a couple seconds later, it doesn't want anything to do with you. I could do it myself. And it's that fight that they go through, which is very natural of like, I need help. I want to do it like sort of the right way. Oh, I need my complete independence. But they don't tell you, oh, by the way, you're going to be shifting gears now. So in a couple of seconds, I'm going to be shifting gears and letting you know that you are the worst dad that's out there, which is actually a compliment. If I know I'm the worst dad, it knows I'm doing something, right? But they don't tell you when they're going to be doing that shift. And then the other thing I just wanted to say, and I don't know if I got a chance to say this in earlier, is one of the things that somebody told me was it's really important for girls, and it's for boys too, but really important for girls to be good at one thing, starting at like the toddler age. And so one thing that I did and that just helped her in her tween ages is she had a pencil and she would draw. And she just did this amazing, she was just naturally talented. She would do 16 different pages, coloring them in. And then my mother-in-law put them up on a door. And all 16 literally looked like they were drew from one piece of paper. And you can just cut them in different ways. And then what I decided was we moved out of the city at 2 years and 9 months. I was going to teach my daughter how to play ball. So in those really cold days and everyone's watching football, I was out there kicking a soccer ball around with Sam and getting her the pink glove and the pink softball. And, you know, the approach that I took is if she's going to build self-esteem, then she may as well let's do it together. So one of the things I did was I saw some of my neighbors were yelling at their kids they couldn't catch. They're yelling at their four-year-old and five-year-old boys they couldn't catch. So I just said, all right, your job is just to touch the mitt to the ball. That's it. And after like 10 minutes, she touched the mitt to the ball, we were done. And we'd come out another day and then she caught the ball. I'm like, really? You caught it? Oh my God, that's amazing. And so we started building and my, you know, Lori too, building self-esteem up. And when Sam hit those teen years, she really had a tremendous amount of confidence. And I have to say it comes from her, but I hope that I had a little bit to do with it. And if I did, she approached all the sports in the town with this really great attitude, teammate. Now, remember, Neppa is an only child, and we didn't really talk about this. But we did get her a dog when she was four. And, you know, it was really important for her to see that there's some sense of responsibility that she has to have. So in the tween years, she was trying out for softball. There were only like two positions available. And it was very political in my town where I live. And so there's six coaches because four of the dads know their kids aren't going to make the team. And Samantha made it. And then she became known in the town as just like one of the top picks because she not only played well and she not only practiced, But whenever kids were going up, getting to go up to bat, or they were getting ready to play position, she's like, you can do it. You can do it. And then, you know, when they would miss the ball, she's like, don't worry about it. It's just one time. You can.
Yeah, she's being supportive.
And totally supportive. A lot more than I was when I was that age. She was being supportive without having a brother or sister. So, you know, you talk about the tween years, they're very interesting. You know, they go from at least, they went from like the princesses to High School Musical, which was back then. And everything you buy is High School Musical. And then remember, kids are also become very judgmental. So, you know, Adam, I think when we were talking either yesterday or the day before, I said, I just wanted a healthy kid. That's all I really wanted. But in the back of my mind, I really wanted a girl. And I think I'm one of the only guys I talked to that actually wanted that, because I wanted to see life through Samantha's eyes or through a girl's eyes. And, you know, you get to do that. And in the tween years, you know, there are kids that want to be friends with her. And then all of a sudden they're not friends with her. But the cool thing is that Samantha is very inclusive. So when she was going out, when somebody would invite her somewhere, she would say, well, I'm already getting together with so-and-so. Can she join us? And that was just really cool to see. Now, that's the positive part. Now you ask, like, what you should fear. You know, I don't know what to tell you. Samantha would come in and say, I can't sleep. And I'd be like, well, I'm traveling tomorrow. Like, you have to go to sleep. She's like, no, that's it. I'm not going to sleep. I'm just going to sit on the bed. I'm like, no, we don't do that. You can't sit on the bed. So I would gently lift her up and bring her into the room. And then she'd come back in. And then I'm like, I would gently lift her up and bring her into the room and she'd come back in. And then you had to start drawing some lines. And one of the lines that, you know, so Lori and I weren't always on the same page with some of our decisions. And one of the things we decided was like, Sam, if you can't sleep, I can teach you how to do that tomorrow night and every other night. But you could sleep on our floor. You just can't sleep in our bed in between the two of us, because we didn't think that was healthy. And that's, you know, that's just like, you know, one thing with sleeping. But the other things were just like, I got a lot of no's. Everything was a no. Everything was like, I'm not doing this. Everything was like, I'm in my room now and you can't come in. And I'm thinking, she's right. I actually can't come in. I don't know if I'm covering this. I hope I'm covering this topic like pretty well. But I know you guys haven't experienced it, but these are, you know, a lot of the things that go on. And I really think it's important that when your kid is a tween, definitely find some time, like if it's every other Saturday or every Friday night or every other Sunday, maybe it's Game of Thrones, whatever it is, have some time with your wife where it's just the two of you, you know. And when Lauren and I wanted to get intimate, we created a bedroom downstairs and we just locked the door. And even if we had 5 or 10 minutes to hug each other, that was it. If Samantha knocked on the door, it didn't really make a difference. And sometimes you have to also have those hard conversations about money and conversations about healthy food and conversations about what are we going to do when we go to this party and you get along with the mom and I don't get along with the dad, or vice versa. But if you're not on the same page, and that was one of the things that was happening with us, then we had to figure out, how are we going to parent together but have two completely sets of rules? And it was really difficult. And then someone told me, Carrie, it's okay. You can have one, you can be a little bit more disciplined, and someone else doesn't have to be as disciplined. And the teen will go ahead and say that mom said yes or said no. Can you say yes or no or whatever it is? And they think all these, you know, they then manipulate you the best that they can, which is part of their job. But I would just say, like, you know, when things aren't going so smoothly, have those conversations and know where you guys agree and where you guys don't agree. Because the tween, she would come to me and ask me questions. And then I would say, did you ask mom? "Oh yeah, I did." She said, "No." I'm like, "Well, why are you asking me?" It's like, "Well, you know, maybe you'll say yes." So,
I get that right now.
Shut up, perspective. I talk for a while.
I think you hit on a lot of the things. I mean, I know that we haven't hit those years yet, but me seeing it as a teacher, I do. I've seen that where they don't want the parents around, or they don't want them going. Like when I've taken my kids to an amusement park in the past, the students, and they're like, "No, my parent can't chaperone and be a part of this. I don't want them there," and they kind of start to detach. And I totally can see that happening, and I can relate to that just by seeing it through my students' experiences and what they go through and how they kind of want to handle their distance from their parents. And definitely not something that I'm looking forward to. I don't know how I'm going to handle that. I already get emotional about it as it is. So I thank you for sharing all that information. I totally think you've hit it right on the head. And thanks so much, Carrie, for joining us today. We're really excited. You shared so much knowledge, and you're just have had a lot of experience from those early years through those tween years, and we're just really happy to have you on the Dad Experience. Don't forget that the Dad Experience is a part of the Parents On Demand Network. You can get our podcast along with many others on their app that you can get at the iTunes Store or the Google Play Store. Don't forget to check out the dadexperiencepodcast.com. You have all of our information there and how you can subscribe and review and do all those great things for our podcast. Thank you so much for following and supporting us. Follow us on our social medias, Instagram, all those other great things. You can find those links in our show notes. Thanks again for listening to The Dad Experience.
This podcast is a proud member of Parents on Demand, a network of high-quality shows for families just like yours. Download our free network app on Apple and Android and listen to your favorite episodes on the go.